950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Democrat of the day today, it's the triumphant return of Senator John Marty, Senate District 66. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about last year, the upcoming year, and what he's going to be doing here with redistricting. Senator Marty, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
My pleasure, Matt. Thanks for inviting me.
My pleasure. I wanted to have you on. We had Jason Isaacson on yesterday as Democrat of the Day. You two are in a unique situation. You're currently in Senate District 66. It's Senate District 40 is going to be your new one starting in November, right?
That's right. And that one I would have chosen. What would I have chosen to do? I'm happy with that district, but I don't like situations where we're merged into running against a colleague.
Yeah.
Colleague who we respect and so on. Yeah.
No, and this is I'm going to say the same thing I said yesterday. First of all, Senate District 40 is going to have a ludicrous bevy of a choice here, because you're going to have two fantastic senators to choose from here. There is some way on the freaking planet we could get both you and Isaacson back into St. Paul. We would be a better state for it. It is that tough decision, but for you, I mean, you've had a long career in politics, and it's kind of one of the things there. You feel as if, you know, you can still deliver for this new district.
Yeah, I feel very strongly. All the issues I've been working on, climate, on health care, universal health care, I'm so frustrated over these years, and it's something that's kept me going and thinking we've got to wake up our society and wake up our political system to address these challenges. So, no, I feel I'm in the midst of a ton of issues, and that I think I've provided a clear voice on the direction we as a society need to take in the years. And I've had plenty of victories. The last six have been a lot less pleasant and so on, because we've been in the minority and the Republicans aren't hearing any of our bills. Virtually not.
Well, I will say this. If you look at the redistricting map, I mean, Senjum's seat down in Rochester, I'm going to have a hard time thinking that that's not going to become more a Democratic seat. I saw a Chamberlain seat is going to be very hard for him to hold. Osmek's gone because he's not going to win that seat. I can guarantee you that. There are some marginal 1 or 2 point, pickups for Republicans in some Democratic seats, like the Moorhead seat and stuff like that. But the reality is what I'm seeing that the Democrats actually do have an opportunity here come November if people get out and vote, because if they just hold the seats that they should, as in Democratic areas, we'll have a Democratic majority in the Senate.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. And you mentioned Moorhead. I think we've got a candidate there, the incumbent. Kent Eakin is just a stellar candidate who works very hard. The people know him and everybody loves him. And so I think we're not going to, I don't think that one we're going to lose. I think we've got a very good chance. You know as well as I do, there are lots of things that could gum up the works and everything else. And you can't predict elections 2 days out, let alone 7, 8 months out, 9 months out. You can never know, but I think there's a lot of promise in what happens. I think the lines are fair, as much as I hate what happened in my district, but the second time in a row I've lost 3/4 of my district. But you live with it and you meet new people, and that's wonderful, and I've represented some of these folks in the past as well. So, I look forward to it, and I don't like being in the same district as a friend, but that's what the courts gave us.
Well, and I will say this. It's a good sign for the state. The state is growing. We're not losing population. We're picking up a lot of population, as a matter of fact. So in the long run, it's a good sign. Like I said, whoever in the new Senate District 40 they get as a senator, they're going to have a sensational senator. All my best to you both on that. We'll make sure we do, as I did yesterday with Senator Isaacson, I'll make sure we drive at the end of this people to your website if they'd like more information about your campaign coming up here this fall. Let's go back to the task at hand. You're the ranking minority member on finance. Let's talk about the last year. How do you feel think last year went, and is there anything particular that you were really proud of?
No, not a lot that I was really proud of. Again, that was because I think the House was trying to do a lot of good things. Governor was trying to do a lot of good things, but the Senate Republicans mucked it up. And just one quick illustration, education. The Republicans came out with a plan. They bold new increases in education spending they advertised. even the total bottom line, even though they were wasting a lot of money on things I think were inappropriate, they were increasing it by $150 million total. And they said, what a big increase this was. Well, I, finance lead, I dug out the inflation numbers because the state budget forecast never counts for inflation. And it does in a few specific areas, but for K-12 education funding, it basically does not. And so you factor in inflation, it would have meant the schools would have needed $500 million just to break even. Inflation neutral would be $500 million more. And so Republicans' generous increase, as they call it, was actually a $350 million cut. The House and the governor proposed significantly more, and the compromise ended up being, I don't remember what, just over $500 million. In effect, we were, I don't want to call it pocket change, because it might be $15 million, but it's, in terms of the budget, it, percentage-wise, it's pocket change, that they would, the schools hardly did better than inflation, if that. And given other challenges the schools have, it was probably a cut for many districts. And you see the districts struggling. So, you know, that's what the end result was. Despite some good DFL efforts, the Senate was fighting against it. So I'm not thrilled with what happened. Again, overall, it would have been a lot worse if we didn't have the governor and House pushing on the other side. But this next year, again, the interesting thing is when I look at this coming session, you look at one of the biggest issues they're trying to make in the election, understandably, is public safety. And I'm serving on the governor's Justice Reinvestment Initiative. It's like 20 people, first time I ever had to go on a background check to serve on a task force or commission, so it must be important. But no, I guess all governor's appointments do that now. And there are only four legislators, two Democrats, two Republicans. We're looking at taking the money we could save by not having people who are on probation or supervised release have some situation that bumps them back into prison, which is very costly, and try and make sure we have better supervision so people don't reoffend. And it's a wonderful task force, really thoughtful people, sheriffs and prosecutors and probation officers and corrections people, really good task force. And we're talking about public safety, and we're making our final report this week or next week, and it's going to be really good things that are going to make our supervision system better and offenders less likely to reoffend. But at the same time, a lot of the probation officers and everybody says, you know, what we really need, though, is in addition to better supervision, we got to treat their mental health. We got to treat their substance use. And there aren't any programs up in our area, or there are no programs in our area that have space that we can refer them to. And if we don't get them treatment for their chemical dependency or mental health, they're not likely to succeed. They're likely to reoffend. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, if we're talking public safety, why don't we simply say anybody who's under government supervision, court supervision because of some offense, we're going to make 100% sure they get the treatment they need right away. And how much would that cost? I couldn't give even a ballpark number, but let's say it's $200 million a biennium. Wouldn't that be the best way? I mean, the experts all say that's the way you're going to cut crime. Mm-hmm. Why don't we do that? But, you know, Republicans, I think they're all saying, oh, we don't have any money. And they're saying maybe we could talk about next year. Well, next year the $7 billion, quote, surplus will be gone. And I don't like to call it a surplus because surplus means extra, and we haven't met the needs yet.
Yeah. I will say this, Republicans, and this is me saying this, one, $200 million is a few tax breaks to a few of their donors, so that's where they've already ballparked that. And two, let's just be blunt, Republicans don't want to stop crime because they campaign against it so much. And that, so if we actually started to limit it, it is an issue there. But you did touch on one thing I want to say, I mean, because we've talked about mental health issues. We've got a rolling crisis coming down the line with kids who have had 2 years of pandemic school, with the stresses of having to do things remotely. We have a mental health crisis in this country that's not only very valid, your point, very valid about trying to limit the people going back into prison, but just overall, should we be, do you think we should be focusing more on, and for everyone, increasing mental health spending dramatically to try to get Minnesota ready for the oncoming wave of that?
Right, absolutely. We've never done a very good job with mental health. In the past, until 50, 60 years ago, we locked people up if they had mental illness, which is kind of unconstitutional, I'd argue. But we finally grew past that, and we're going to treat them in the community instead. Well, we did good at releasing them from locking them up, but we didn't do a good job of addressing them in the communities. And I say that knowing there are some superb mental health programs, superb substance use treatment programs, wonderful things happening in the state, but not nearly enough of them, and not nearly at the right time, and not nearly accessible. And to me, as you know, I've been pushing for a long time a universal health care system, Minnesota Health Plan, which would guarantee everybody for all their medical needs, including things that aren't extras like dental or substance use disorder, vision, and so on. Treat them for everything. And if we did that, it's interesting whenever we're trying to get a cost analysis of Minnesota Health Plan versus the current system, because we think there's very strong evidence it's cheaper to cover everybody and give them the care they need. Mm-hmm. We think it's cheaper. And even without copays and deductibles, it's cheaper. And so we want to have a chance to do that. And that would take care of this mental health stuff and would really have the spin-off benefits of fewer homes, families that are broken up because of kids put into foster care because the parents either substance use or mental health problems. It would stop the breaking up of families. It would reduce crime significantly. Not that mental illness or substance use is a crime. The trouble is we've made crimes out of health issues. Mm-hmm. And so we have to do it. But no, you're exactly right. The COVID crisis has made the mental health challenges so much worse. And we weren't doing good before then.
John Marty joining us, Senator from District 66, Democrat of the day. As you bring up, and I will say this too, I mean, your health care plan, considering how many people in this state have gone financially bankrupt because of medical bills in the last 2 years because of the pandemic. I mean, people that have had to go to an ICU for 45 days, God willing, they're okay and they're back home, but that ain't cheap. And all of a sudden, people are having to sell homes and houses and farms, and they're having to get out of it because they've got a lifetime of medical debt now.
Consistently, more than half of all bankruptcies have a huge medical cost component. I think the number is close to two-thirds of the total number of people who declare bankruptcy. Health care costs were a huge part of it. And that's ridiculous. You go to other countries, you talk about people going bankrupt from health care, and they kind of look at you saying, what do you mean? Yeah. Why would you go bankrupt from health care? Well, because you can't afford the bill. And why would that be? And I keep thinking it's so bizarre. And I mean, Minnesota Health Plan, we believe, would save money. But the main reason for pushing it is because we want healthier people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And to the people who have – the people who think, well, I got great health care. Well, what about their kids? People, veterans, for instance, they've got great health care. If you're qualified for the Veterans Administration, you've got great health care. But what about your kids? Mm-hmm. You care about them just as much. And we think that it's a fundamental change the way society thinks these things through. We have to think it through differently. And I like the analogy of hospitals and schools. When a child turns 5 years old, they get to go to kindergarten. They don't have to qualify. Their parents don't have to have the right insurance plan. Their school doesn't have to be in network. They don't have to worry about who's going to pay the copays and deductibles. They just get to go. Why? Well, we want every kid to get an education. And don't we also want everyone to get health care?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when they ask the Canadian truckers, why don't you just immigrate to the United States, the first thing they say is, well, lose my health care? No way. That's the thing.
They couldn't afford to. Nobody could afford to. Yeah.
No. Exactly. Senator, let's look at this upcoming year. You've got a session coming in here still representing 66. What do you want to champion in this upcoming year?
Okay. I'm going to be doing a lot on public safety related to reducing crime, alternatives to the policing things that we've been doing not so good, or let's face it and call it bad. Because it is. A lot of people who are scared of crime are scared to turn to the police, too, because they're afraid they're a target. And that's really a shame, and that's something we have to address. But I also think we have to address gun violence and so on if we're serious about reducing crime. Because in my mind, the Republicans who listen to the NRA and who do this, their crime package is a couple of things. One, more money for police, more money for prisons, and attack DFLers for, in their mind, causing crime. DFLers are a lot more sophisticated than that. Some gun stuff, not, I think they're still, quote, gun shy, but some gun violence prevention stuff, and at the same time, doing making sure we have public safety, police, and others who can address these things, but equally or more important, making our police departments less militarized, making sure that we don't have things like no-knock warrants. The House heard a bill on that today. I'm glad to hear that. We're going to have things like that, but also the mental health and the treatment of people. There's so many things we could do. Our communities could be much safer, and we're not doing a great job of that in the past. And the Republican response is the failed things of the past, because it sounds, they say they're tough on crime. I say they're dumb tough on crime. I want us to be smart tough on crime. And that's what I think we as DFLers want to push.
I remember when Pawlenty and that crew, they put on the carry and conceal thing, and they all were saying this will stop all crime in Minnesota. That's how they sold it. They sold it. You know, can I just tell you to all the Republicans out there, and this is me saying it, not you, Senator, your theory about the good guy with the gun sucks at stopping crime, okay? I'm just going to let you know. They don't stop crime, and we have a heck of a lot more of it and a heck of a lot more gunshots. I think we can say your entire policy has failed. So I'm hoping the Democrats control.
They keep pushing the NRA line that they push heavily the NRA line that they have a right to bear arms. And I keep thinking the Constitution uses two words that they seem to forget about. They talk about a well-regulated militia. What part of the word well-regulated do they not understand? And when they say that regulations are a burden on them, what they're basically saying is we don't want to put that burden on anyone, including the people who are trying to acquire guns to commit carjackings and other violent crimes. And basically the Republican response is, oh, well, they might be law-abiding. We don't want to put any restrictions on them getting access to guns until after they've done their violence. And then if they didn't kill themselves in their crime spree, we can punish them then. Mm-hmm. That's what I call dumb tough on crime. I want to have smart tough on crime.
They're lunacy. It's just absolute lunacy with all the guns right now in this state, and they don't want to do anything to stop it. All right. Once again, an embarrassment of riches heads your way if you're in the new Senate District 40. You are going to have a heck of a primary here between Senator John Marty and Senator Jason Isaacson, who are both now going to be competing to be the DFL representative to run in the general election. JohnMarty.org, is that still your website?
Yes, it is. I hope people will get out. And for people in District 40, I look forward to meeting those I don't know and love to have support, because I think the work I've been doing is incredibly important to making a better, safer future for all people. And I'm convinced we can do it. My passion for this is as strong as ever, and I hope to continue.
I will give you this here, and I heard from one of your constituents that's currently in 66 is going to lose you because they're going to be in a different district than you are going to be in, and one from Senator Isaacson. They both of them said the same thing separately, which is, I can't believe I'm losing such a great senator. It's kind of one of those things, like I said, this new Senate District 40, it's going to be an embarrassment of riches. You guys got, it's a heck of a choice there. So you need to go out. John Marty's page, once again, johnmarty.org, johnmarty.org, johnmarty.org. Senator Marty, as always, a pleasure to chat with you. All my best this upcoming year, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks a lot, Matt. Take care.
Take care. Goodbye. Democrat of the day, Senator John Marty, currently Senate District 66, soon to be Senate District 40. We'll take a break, wrap up the hour number one when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.